You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Ross Tucker, host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, works for CBS, Westwood One. You can download the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Also follow him on Twitter at Ross Tucker NFL. And Ross joins us on the program. What's your takeaway from last night's Rams win over Seattle?
Oh, geez. I got a bunch, Dan, both on and off the field, I guess. I'm kind of with you on the Russell Wilson thing. I mean, the first two times they had the ball, Dan, they punted on 4th and 2.5 from the Rams 43. And then they had the ball on the 31-yard line, and it was 3rd and 2. They run a – it looked to me like a zone read, but Russell Wilson just handed it to DJ Dallas, so I guess he couldn't pull it. He gets tackled for no gain. Then 4th down, they run Alex Collins right at Aaron Donald, gets stoned. I literally tweeted, Dan, are the Seahawks aware that Russell Wilson is their quarterback? Like, someone should probably tell them. And it's funny because I got a bunch of replies from people saying – that's why he doesn't want to be there. That's why he's not going to be there. If you just watch those first two series, and I know Russell watches the show or listens, so he's probably watching right now. Russell, you got to go somewhere else, dude. You're like, you can't be somewhere where the first two drives of the game, they punt from the 43 and then run it on 3rd and 4th down when you're their quarterback, dude.
What do you take away if you're the Rams?
You know, the one thing I guess I take away, obviously, I think Stafford is certainly helping them from what they had last year in Goff. Their defense isn't playing as well. You know, they lost Brandon Staley, Dan. I guess it's kind of, what are you going to do? But they lose Brandon Staley to the Chargers. That was a legit brain drain right there. I mean, they had the best defense in football, certainly one of the two or three best last year. They're not nearly as good this year. Now, they did lose some guys. You know, the Browns picked off a couple of their defensive backs, like Johnson and Hill. So they did lose some guys. But they're also using Jalen Ramsey a lot differently. They're putting him in the nickel a lot, in the slot, to cover, you know, the slot receivers. And whatever they're doing, it has not been as effective. And frankly, they were fortunate the way last night went. Even at the end of the first half, you know, Russell throws a touchdown pass. There's a ticky-tack holding penalty, which, by the way, Dan, is my other takeaway from last night's game. Two things. Number one, clock mismanagement is an absolute epidemic in the NFL. I am shocked how often these guys screw up the clock, number one. Number two, even just that last drive, a very questionable roughing the passer penalty on Aaron Donald, followed by a questionable holding penalty on Dwayne Brown that I don't think was a hold. It was ticky-tack on a touchdown pass. Like, I know, Dan, that if you were the commissioner or if Roger Goodell called you, you would say to him, Roger, why don't we, if we're not sure, not throw the flag? Like, why are we throwing flags on questionable calls? Nobody wants that. Nobody asked for that, Dan. It drives me bananas.
They're trying to protect themselves. They don't want to be second-guessed that way. Hey, when in doubt, throw the flag.
It should be the opposite. Man. It should be when in doubt, don't throw the flag. All of us can live with if they let them play a little bit more. Okay, well, Aaron Donald, he got up to his neck area, but that was not much. Or Donald Brown, Dwayne Brown, okay, but let him play. Nobody. There's too many flags. It's very, very annoying. And for some reason, Dan, you know how many ineligible man downfield calls they've had this year? And I'm on all those meetings before the season where they tell you, they never said that was a point of emphasis. They never said that. The Eagles have been called for it 4 times already. 2 of them touchdowns.
You're shot out of a cannon this morning.
Dude, I get up at 4:30. I have way too much iced tea because I don't like the flavor of coffee. So I have like Pure Leaf iced tea for like 3/4 of it. And I put in just a little bit of Diet Snapple for the flavor.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. Because the whole Diet Snapple, that's like too strong for me. So that's my morning mix, especially when I know I'm going on with you.
Would you rather have Aaron Donald or Jalen Ramsey?
Aaron Donald. Okay. Yeah, I think a defensive tackle, a dominant defensive tackle, is the most important position on a defense. Ramsey's very good, but you can so often just avoid him if you choose to. And even a defensive end, it's easier to chip those guys. Quarterbacks are so good at stepping up in the pocket when they run around the edge. You have a very impactful defensive tackle. You got problems. I mean, he had like 4 quarterback hits last night, 5 pressures, 8. I mean, he is maybe one of the best defensive players. My rookie year was 2001. The best guy I ever played against, best defensive player, was Ray Lewis. I hope people realize, like, Aaron Donald's that kind of player. Like, when they do 10 years from now, Belichick does that show and they do the top 100 players ever, Aaron Donald is like a top 20 all-time football player.
Talking to Ross Tucker, host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, also does work for CBS and Westwood One as a color analyst. We were thinking about this. How many times, how many teams have had the two best defensive players at their position in the league? The Rams have that with Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking about the Ravens, Ed Reed and Ray Lewis. Yeah.
You know, I don't know why this came to my head, but, and this is kind of behind, before my time, Dan, but Mean Joe Green and Mel Blunt.
Well, you also had Jack Lambert.
Jack Ham. Jack Ham was good.
Yeah. But I don't know if they were considered the best linebackers at their position. But Mel Blunt at the back end, and you had Mean Joe Green, certainly were. I'm trying to think who else comes to mind. Did the Cowboys have anybody? You had Randy White or Bob Lilly, but I don't know if you had anybody in the back end that was the best.
Was there anybody? I'm trying to think, was there anybody in the front seven when they had Deion in Dallas?
Well, Deion was in a variety of places. So I'm trying to think that with Dallas, did they have a Charles Haley? Was Charles, but I don't think
you know
was,
what? I don't know if he was the best, but he was very good. I'll give you another one. And Paulie would probably suggest this. Richard Dent. I don't know if he was the best DN because of Reggie White, but he was close. And I think Mike Singletary was the best middle backer. So when the mid-80s Bears had a shot there.
How about Warren Sapp, Derek Brooks, John Lynch?
And Rondé Barber was up there too.
Yeah. And Simeon Rice.
4 Hall of Fame guys.
Yeah. And you had Simeon Rice as well,
who was a very good player. To have it at all 3 levels of the defense like that, too, no wonder they won the Super Bowl.
Yeah. James Harrison, Troy Polamalu?
I would say, you know, Harrison was Defensive Player of the Year one time.
Yeah.
So, yes. And then Polamalu was probably the best safety that year, although I was always more of an Ed Reed guy. Those guys were just, you know, that's another one of my takeaways from last night, Dan. The Seahawks are paying Jamal Adams a lot of money to look that bad in coverage.
Yeah.
I mean,
but was he ever a coverage guy though, Ross? Wasn't he a guy he was a guy who came up to stop the run.
Now he's like a linebacker.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they're using him as a deep middle of the field, you know, half field safety, but he did not look good in that role. I don't know. They need to blitz him. He needs to be in the box. But he's not Polamalu. He's not Ed Reed. But they're paying him like that. He's not that kind of player.
Are you a Baker Mayfield fan?
I am, but I thought last Sunday was the worst he's ever played, probably by a decent amount. And I think the Browns are going to have a real decision on their hands. Because
would you pay him, though, $40, $45 million a year?
No, I would not. And it's weird because I think the guys like him. I think he's a leader. I think he's a good quarterback. I think he's a top 20 quarterback, but he's at the bottom end of the top 20. He's not even probably top 15. Yeah. And I think the realistic portion of this, the reality is that I think there's a lot of quarterbacks that can do what he did. They have the best O-line in the NFL. They have the best run game. Stefanski's a terrific coach. I think there are quarterbacks 20 through 27 in the NFL that could put up very good numbers and win with Baker Mayfield, and you could pay them a lot less.
I just don't know why there's not middle ground. Why is it the next quarterback who comes up is going to make at least $40 million? Because if I'm the Browns, I don't want to spend that kind of money. You know, can I do 3 years for $30 million or 3 years for $28 million, something like that? Why is it you're either cut or you get the top-end money?
You know what's funny about that, Dan? Nobody else would give him that money, right? Like, who is the team that's saying, you know what we need to do if he becomes a free agent? We got to get Baker Mayfield for $40 million a year. I just don't think there's any other. What happens is you're winning and you have a guy you can win with, and teams get so afraid of not having a winning quarterback, a top 20 quarterback, that I think they panic and they pay them, because other teams aren't going to pay Baker $40 million. They're going to say, we'll draft the next guy, or we'll take a retread project like a Sam Darnold, or, you know, a guy that flames out with his first team. No one's going to pay Baker Mayfield top dollar. So if I'm the Browns, I'm not either.
Have a great weekend. Always great to talk to you. Settle down a little bit, all right?
I will. I'll calm down now.
Wait,
sorry.
Wait. Hold on. McLovin needs you. What?
Ross, we queued you up to talk about Buddy Ryan's Eagles defense and Reggie White, Jerome Brown, Clyde Simmons. You could any two defensive players there. You grew up like me on Eagles.
Yeah, but Reggie was the best at his position. The other guys weren't.
Jerome Brown?
I think you could have made an argument for Jerome Brown a couple of those years. Clyde Simmons, McLovin, how are you going to say Clyde Simmons when he plays the same position as Reggie White?
All right, fine.
That there's no logic there.
Hey, this show needs more Eagles love. I've been saying that, Ross. You got to help me here. I'm on an island.
Are you all in on Penn State versus Iowa this weekend?
Oh, dude, it's going to be an awesome game. You know what's weird, Dan? For number three against number four, I feel like it's not getting that much hype.
It's not.
Why is that the case? Like, I feel like
because
people are talking more about Oklahoma, Texas, or the SEC games. It's number three against number four.
Iowa doesn't get coverage because we buy into Iowa, it seems like, every year at some point, and then they find the banana peel.
This is the game that they would typically lose. I don't know, man. I watched them against Maryland. They are very good. But look at – you know, here what's crazy. I know – I love your college football stuff, Dan. There are five teams at least in the Big Ten East that are better than the second-best team in the Big Ten West. Like, it's just – they got to do something about it. It's just not equitable. I mean, if Iowa beats Penn State, they're going undefeated.
Did Penn State recruit you?
You know what? I got two handwritten letters from Jerry Sandusky.
Ooh.
Believe it or not. Ooh. The first one was to come to camp over the summer, but I knew I would run a bad 40 time, so I didn't do that. The second one was you should walk on. But you know what's weird? When you're in high school and they ask you to walk on, I guess I just figured I wasn't good enough. So I thought, okay, I'll go to Princeton or Harvard. And then my rookie year with Washington, all the Penn State guys were telling me I would have started 3 years. I would have been like their best O-lineman. I grew up an hour and a half from there. I had season tickets. I was like, la, 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 I can't hear you. I can't hear you. Like that was my wife still gets mad because I still would have loved it. She's like, you went to the best school in the country. I'm like, I know, but I could have played at Penn State.
Yeah. And what your career could have been.
You know, it's funny you say that, Dan. No, I because in all sincerity, I probably would have been like a third or fourth round pick. I don't know if that really makes much of a difference, but your entry point matters, right? Like being an undrafted free agent, the only spot I could make was being the ninth and last guy on Marty Schottenheimer's first team in 01. And then it's kind of always an uphill climb.
Yeah.
And your draft status always stays with you. Whereas if you go to one of those bigger schools and maybe you're a second or third round pick and they're invested in you, it does make a difference. There's no question.
Keep your head up, okay?
All right. See you guys.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
The decorated columnist for the L.A. Times and, of course, Around the Horn contributor Bill Plaschke joining us from San Francisco. How big a surprise were the Giants this year to you, Bill?
Well, there was such a surprise, Dan, that I was on the radio in May proclaiming they would not finish the season with a 500 record. I thought they were a mirage. I thought they were a mirage till the end. I thought the Dodgers were going to catch them. It wasn't until Dodger Stadium, the last Sunday of the last day of the season, when the Giants, when suddenly the Dodgers were playing the Brewers, and suddenly the crowd breaks out in a Giants suck chant, and I knew the Giants had clinched the division. That's not until then that I believe they could do it. I don't know how they're doing it. Half these players haven't been in the playoffs before. Half of them, a year ago, I never heard of half of these guys. I mean, it's amazing what the Giants have done.
What would have been the fallout if the Dodgers had lost that game to the Cardinals?
Oh, baby. Well, I said they're going to be the best team in baseball history. So I said it before the season. So it'd have been steep. I mean, it wouldn't have been as bad as if they lost this series to the Giants, because it was a one game coin flip with the Cardinals, and it wasn't really a fair baseball soul whack, Dan. I'm sure you agree with me on this, right? That baseball should have seedings. The Dodgers shouldn't have played a wild card game, winning 106 games, and the Dodgers shouldn't be playing the Giants as early in the playoffs. That's ridiculous. So I think the fallout wouldn't have been as bad as if, but if they lose to the Giants, it's going to be bad. It's going to be real bad. All the pressure's on the Dodgers. Giants are playing with house money. Dodgers have every bit of pressure on them.
But this is what I want to happen, Bill. Everybody's up in arms because the Yankees were in a one-game playoff and the Dodgers in a one-game playoff. That's when you have change. And I keep saying, if this was Toronto and Tampa, nobody would give a damn about it. If it was the Padres against the Giants in a one-game playoff, nobody would care about it. It's the Dodgers and it's the Yankees, and maybe we see change with the one-game playoff.
John, I don't agree with that with the Dodgers standpoint, even the Yankees, because it's just one game. They can always, the GMs and executives can always say it was just a coin flip game. They lost one game. It would have been bad, but what's coming next? If the Dodgers lose, if they lose from here on out, it's really, it's a
no,
lot
no, no.
Work.
I'm talking about Major League Baseball making a change
with one game. Okay.
And John Smoltz was on earlier this week, and he said, why don't you make the team who has less wins, they have to beat that team twice, whereas the team with more victories only has to beat that team once. I don't know if that's a solution here, but the one-game playoff, while I like it, I don't think it's fair, but I also think they should seed. You know, give the Dodgers Absolutely. Credit for winning 106 games, and, you know, they shouldn't be playing the Giants. I agree with that.
The Dodgers are being penalized for geography. That's it. It's all about geography. And baseball, and you know, sports pennant race, sports championship shouldn't be decided by geography, and that's what it is.
How big a concern, no Kershaw for the postseason?
You know, not as much as you would think. They have three good starters. I mean, they have with Scherzer and Buehler and Urias, and Tony Gonsolin has been good as a fourth guy. Not as much as you think. Kershaw's been up and down. He's always one sore elbow away from coming off the mound. I think much bigger concern is Max Muncy. Losing him is huge. That craters the Dodgers middle of their lineup. He bats behind Trey Turner. He's given Trey Turner a lot of support this year. Muncy's a much bigger issue than Kershaw.
How much bigger do you think would Shohei Ohtani be if he played in Los Angeles as opposed to in Anaheim?
Oh, it's enormous. I mean, I've said this before on the show. Mike Trout could walk into a coffee shop in L.A. and nobody would know who he was. Shohei would be huge. And Shohei might eventually end up playing for the Dodgers, because he's not happy, as I'm sure you've talked about. He's not happy down in Anaheim. He wants change. He wants them to get some pitch. He wants them to get better. He sees what's happened to Mike Trout. He doesn't want that to happen to him. Shohei's on the verge of he's all but asking for a trade. The Angels better improve and improve quick, or he's gone. And the Dodgers would snap him up in a heartbeat.
He's Bill Plaschke, LA Times columnist, Around the Horn contributor, joining us from San Francisco tonight at Oracle Park. It'll be game one. The best of five, by the way, National League Divisional Series. Best of five favor Dodgers or the Giants?
I think it favors the Dodgers, because they have the three starting. You got to beat Scherzer, Urias, or Buehler. You got to beat one of them. And I don't think the Giants can do that. I just think the Giants were a fun story, a nice dream season. I just don't think they're built for the postseason. They're not built for the starting pitching that the Dodgers have. And I think a five game series, it also mitigates Kershaw's loss. So I think it definitely favors the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers are going to probably win this in four. I don't think it even goes five.
If I said you could pick the LA team to win a title this year, you can pick the Lakers now, you could pick the Rams to win the Super Bowl, you can pick the Dodgers to win the World Series.
Well, we already had Lakers and Dodgers. I picked the Rams because they tried so hard. They spent $5 billion on a stadium. They spent all these draft picks on Matthew Stafford. The Rams have done everything. Les Snead has done everything for his fans. You know, they've done everything for their fan base. They have tried to be LA's team. It would be that would be the team to win. Although, it's funny you didn't mention the Chargers. The Chargers are becoming LA's team a little bit, Dan. Don't sleep on the Chargers. Of course, you're always a Justin Herbert fan. I know that.
Yeah. I've been all in on the Chargers for 15 years, Bill. You know, I'm waiting on them. They shouldn't be waiting on me, but I think the Chargers are a really interesting team, but I'm not sure they always find the banana peel. There's always injuries or there's always disappointment.
Yeah, they have to get over it. They have to get over it themselves. I'll tell you this, the Charger PR staff, they give us parking right across the street from SoFi. The Rams make us park far away. So, go Chargers! You know, Dan, we cheer for ourselves.
Oh, I know how it is to be in the media. Like, what do we have? What's our, the press box spread that we're going to have?
Press box spread. We've got the better bracket. That's what it's all about.
The Lakers roster, we already had Ariza, who's going to be out with
isn't that amazing? They've already lost a guy for a month. They're so old and creaky, but you know what? They've all got their damn vaccines. That's all I care about right now. They all got vaccinated. They're all sticking together. I've been impressed so far with what Westbrook has shown. He hasn't caused a stir yet. So let's wait and see. But I think just judging from the first week of practice and the media day and all that, they seem to be more connected. They seem to realize they're old, they're creaky, nobody believes in them. They're kind of it's kind of bonded them. And I think maybe that collective wisdom could make them a better team than I thought they were going to be.
Well, what I like with Westbrook is that I think he'll help LeBron during the regular season because Westbrook will probably take a majority of the ball, more minutes, and maybe you almost have load management for LeBron without actually calling it load management. And I think that that's important. I think Anthony Davis being in good shape. Anthony Davis should be Giannis. He should be dominant.
Oh, he should be their MVP. He should be their leader. I've said this to him. I said this to everybody. Everybody said this out here. The most important thing in LA sports, perhaps in the last year, is how was his offseason? Did Anthony Davis make the commitment to get stronger and stay healthier? Because it's on his shoulders, and he's got to realize that. This should be his team, and it's not, and it should be. And I don't think they can win a championship if it's not. Because he's the only guy he's got the youth and he's got the versatility. You're right, he should be Giannis, and he's not, and it should bother him. I wish it would bother him more that he's not Giannis.
He should be better than Giannis because he shoots better than Giannis does. But Giannis, to me, and I've said this before, the difference between Giannis and Ben Simmons is Giannis is not afraid to fail. That hey, if I shoot a free throw and it doesn't look good, or my 3-point shot, he just never stops. Whereas Ben Simmons gets paralyzed and he doesn't want to be embarrassed. And Anthony Davis is somewhere in between.
All you have to do with Anthony Davis, Dan, is watch LeBron's body language. When Anthony Davis goes down, LeBron rolls his eyes, shrugs his shoulders. Anthony Davis is always wincing. He's always grabbing something. He's always hobbling. He's always limping. And it looks like he just is afraid to be himself sometimes. And that's a biggest Laker question as anything. And maybe Westbrook can get into him. And he said that. He said he wants Westbrook to get into him. Maybe the trouble Westbrook causes on these kind of teams will actually be a blessing for the Lakers.
I'm guessing that the Lakers used to be Showtime. Now you can call them Slow Time. Is that
you call bedtime, early bedtime. But you know what? I love it. Carmelo Anthony says it. He says we're old guys. LeBron says, LeBron reads everything.
I know.
They're using this but I'll say this, for all their connectivity and all their collective wisdom and all this stuff, they've already got, like I said, Ariza's already out. They already got one player out. They haven't barely started exhibition games. And one guy's already injured. So I just don't know how it's going to go.
Well, as long as you have Kyrie and what's going on, that nonsense with the Nets, it certainly helps the Lakers.
Yeah, I mean, because that's the one. That's if the Lakers are at full strength, that's the only team that can beat them is the Nets. The only team that can win the championship besides the Lakers is the Nets. And I think they're probably looking at that. By the way, Dan, you notice this halo over my head here? The LA Times books us. If I'm Platinum Elite, I get booked into heaven.
Oh, is that what it is?
I'm in heaven.
Oh, you are.
Yeah, it's a great update.
I like that. Bill Plaschke is in heaven. Yeah.
Platinum Elite status gets you a lot these days.
That looks nice. Now that I'm looking at that, yes, you have.
Thank you.
There's a holistic illumination behind you. Very, very impressive. You know, you're in a cult maybe in San Francisco there, Bill.
I gave him my card at the front desk and he said, all right, you're on your floor is heaven. LA Times spares no expense in putting us up.
I'm sure of that. Thank you, Bill. Play nice in San Francisco.
You guys.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
He's Brady Quinn, Fox Sports College and NFL studio and game analyst, and he's on Fox Sports Radio. Two pros and a cup of Joe. Two pros and a cup of Joe. LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, the pros, and Jonas Knox is your Joe. You can catch them on Fox Sports Radio weekday, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, which leads right into this award-nominated program. Brady, good morning. Good to have you back here. Do you have a movie or a show that you think is not good, but everybody else thinks is good?
Friends. Ooh. Friends would be that show for me. Yeah, that's going to be an unpopular opinion amongst a lot of people. And look, David Schwimmer is a tremendous actor. I just could not stand Ross. I couldn't stand the character at all. I liked basically every other character, but that particular character just ruined the entire show for me. I hated the whining, just the entire personality of Ross, which really is just a credit to David Schwimmer for the way he was as an actor in that one.
Did you ever meet him?
I've never met him, no.
What would you say to David Schwimmer if you did meet him?
I would say you are one tremendous actor.
And I hated
leave it
you.
At that. I mean,
and, oh, you wouldn't add that. Okay. Yeah.
He invoked hate that I had for a character that he played, which is strong, right? Like love and hate. Those are the two things you're trying to draw from people. He invoked hate out of my heart for a fictitious character. I don't know. Maybe it was based on someone, but he was that good of an actor that's how it made me feel watching that show. I could not watch it.
I couldn't get too deep into it. I just watched because, you know, Jennifer Aniston and Courtney Cox were good looking. Like, that was it. Like, very surface.
Guilty. I mean,
I didn't, you know, dive into the plot or any of that stuff. It's basically just, oh, those are two beautiful women. That's it.
Yeah, that, and I think the humor, right? The humor of Joey, you know, his character was great. Matthew Perry's character was great. Like, there was a lot of, you know, humor to it at times. But as soon as Ross came into picture, I was out. I was kind of done with that episode.
That's all I needed to know from you, Brady. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Talk to you guys next week.
You're in Iowa City. You're in your hotel room in Iowa City.
I am. I'm at the well, I shouldn't say
no,
what hotel
you should,
I should
don't. and I'm in room. No, don't do that. Don't do that. What was the worst road trip you ever had when you were at Notre Dame or with the Cleveland Browns?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Fans heckle, you know, pull the fire alarm.
Oh, college fans, there was two things that distinctly stick out to me. Going to East Lansing. I mean, when they moon you, it's like a different type of moon. Like, they show too much when they moon you on the way in. All right, so Michigan State fans were the worst.
Wait, do you see the moon and the stars when it happens?
They spread the cheeks, I'll just put it that way. That was always really rough going
wait a minute,
there.
Hold on. So that Georgia's between the hedges. This feels like Michigan State is. But so when you are on the team bus pulling into the stadium,
yeah. You can't, I mean, there's multiple people doing it. It's not like one. It's not like, oh, we saw one person. It's multiple. And you're just going, oh, my God, that is so gross. It really does. Like, it takes you about 5 to 10 minutes to, like, realize you got to go play a football game. I got to get my mind off whatever that horrific thing was I just saw. So East Lansing, I give Michigan State right up there. I was scarred from that. And then going out to the old O.co in Oakland, I'll never forget hearing as I get off the bus, and I was early on in my career. I remember hearing this voice yell out some profanities, and I was like so shocked because it was such a high-pitched voice. It sounded like a really young kid. And I turn around. This kid couldn't have been older than 7, and he's giving me the bird. And like, I hadn't even played it or done anything really. And I was like, this kid knows my name. He's yelling out all these obscenities at this point in time, and he's 7 years old. I was like, that's Raider Nation. I obviously was like, where's this kid's parents? Like, what's this kid going to be in the future? But at the same time, I was like, all right, I got some respect. Like, that's Raider Nation. Like, that's the black hole. That's what we're getting ready to go into and have to face.
Well, the Browns weren't good enough to really be hated, but Notre Dame was always, I mean, you know, wherever you went with Notre Dame, that fans hated you. You know, Cleveland wasn't at a level where they looked at you like, oh, we got to worry about them.
That hasn't changed, though, Dan. I mean, we're still hated. I'm still hated. I mean, it's either there's like the Notre Dame fans who love me or hate me. I mean, 51% of the people right now probably hate me for some reason or other because I'm associated with Notre Dame. I realized that when I signed up for it. I didn't know it would be this bad, but that's pretty much what my life has been. Yeah. Even my wife, I think, might be on that 51%. Depending on the day.
You should have gone to Ohio State.
I mean, I don't admit this very often. I almost went to Michigan. Like, Michigan was the place that I loved. Scott Leffler at the time was their quarterback coach, OC. We had a great rapport, academically a strong school. And, you know, you just looked at the track record. Like, I loved Tom Brady growing up. Junior high, high school, like, that was the guy I idolized. And he's still playing, still idolizing him. but there was like,
but isn't that crazy,
like,
Brady? That Tom is still playing, and you wanted to follow in his footsteps at Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, I remember like watching the way he played, his body style, the type of player he was. I ended up getting his offensive coordinator Charlie Weiss at Notre Dame, like later on. So that never really changed, you know. And that was the cool thing about it. What he's doing is ridiculous, but he was a reason. He would have been the reason why a kid out of Columbus, Ohio would have shunned Ohio State to go to Michigan. Like, he was a big piece of all that.
Well, it would have been worse if being from Columbus, you'd have gone to Michigan instead of gone to Notre Dame.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'll never forget the conversation I had with Bo Schembechler. You know, my dad and I had gone up for a visit, and he just, as soon as he heard I was from Columbus, Ohio, he came over to me, shook my hand, and he goes, are you ready to go into Columbus and kick their ass? And my dad was like, where can we sign? You know, where do we commit to all this? And I was like, well, this is cool, but let's pump the brakes on this.
He's Brady Quinn. You can see him on TV. You can hear him on radio, Two Bros and a Cup of Joe. It's the morning show on Fox Sports Radio that precedes this one with LeVar Arrington and the host Jonas Knox. He is in Iowa City, Iowa versus Penn State. This should be a big game. It doesn't feel like a big game nationally. Why is that?
I don't know, because it does here. I mean, on the travel and the way in, a ton of Hawkeye fans, obviously, you know, coming to support their team. A ton of Penn State fans as well traveling for it. I think maybe because there's a little bit of a sense of there's Alabama and Georgia and then everyone else.
Yeah.
Like, I think we've seen those two teams this year pretty dominant. And we feel like the Big Ten, which is probably the second closest conference to the SEC, isn't quite there. But I don't know. I mean, we've got a lot of football left to be played. I'm excited for this matchup. And I'm really curious to see how close a Penn State or Iowa would be versus one of those two teams. I mean, look, I'm not naive enough to sit there and think that Alabama or Georgia would be heavy favorites versus both. But I'd still like to see that matchup. I'd still like to see those teams play off and see where they'd be at this point.
I watched the Georgia front four. I I mean, that to me is NFL quality. That's I watched the Arkansas game, and I felt bad for Arkansas. Whenever those running backs were going to get the ball, and I'm like, oh, this isn't going to end well. That's really – I don't know how good Georgia is. I just know that front is as good as we've seen in a little while. What do you think?
I remember we got kicked out of a travel football league. I think we're using Stick'em when we were like in fifth grade. And so in sixth grade, we had to find a new league. Well, we played up with seventh and eighth graders. And the thing you don't take into account at that age, Dan, is those kids are starting to hit puberty. And I remember the first time we went out and played against, I think it was a Gahanna team there in Ohio. They look like grown men. And that's what it feels like essentially when every team goes up against Georgia. Yeah. I mean, you look at that front and you go, they just look different. I mean, they are massive. They obviously all have, you know, their future is playing in the NFL. But even more so than that, just the way they move to the ball, the way they're coached with Kirby Smart and their scheme, because that's what gets overlooked is they're also out-scheming teams. It's not just pure talent and strength and ability. And so that's why I think everyone's looking for that SEC championship game to see, you know, what comes out of that. And much like last year where you had Clemson win the ACC, Notre Dame loses in the ACC, but they both – end up still getting in, I think you're going to see that play out. Like, I think it's a safe bet to say, since neither Georgia or Alabama have to face each other in the regular season, they're going to score off in the SEC championship game. The loser's still going to get in as the fourth seed, and the winner's obviously going to be the number one seed. Or maybe they'll try to finagle it where they don't have a rematch the following week, because that would be the interesting thing about it, right? Yeah. Is do you want to see them 2 weeks in a row? I don't even think the SEC obviously wants to see that. I think they'd rather see a rematch in the national championship game.
I know you're from Columbus. I know you live in Florida, but you probably know a lot of the people in that area, what happened with Urban Meyer and how you think this plays out with him. As a pro, would you care about your coach as opposed to if you were in college, you're a little bit more beholden to that coach. Like, he holds your future in his hands. As a pro, you're like, hey, coaches come and go. We come and go. It's not as big a deal. How does this play out with Urban Meyer in Jacksonville?
I hate for saying it this way. It all depends on whether or not they win. If they win this week and the next week, I mean, I've during my career, was through a lot of different things. And if you won, it made all of it go away. I mean, really, it did. Like, I remember we had a tragic incident in Kansas City. A player took his life the day before the game. We ended up playing that next day. We won. And it was almost like that went away, and it was like we moved on. Like, the NFL machine just moved on. Yeah. And I remember thinking as like a player and having to go to the funeral the following week and all the emotions that come along with that with our players and our team, and think to myself, this isn't right. Now, that's a completely tragic, different event, but it's that still applies in the NFL to anything that happens off the field. Is if you win, that all ends up getting kind of pushed to the wayside as an afterthought. I mean, if they were a 3-1, 4-0 football team right now, I mean, would we be having the same conversation about what came out on video? Probably not. And I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but that's just the reality of life in the NFL. You're judged differently whether you're winning or losing. And that's why I think it's so key for the players, especially the young players in that locker room, to take over accountability of what happens the next few weeks and how they win or lose these games.
Russell Wilson got hurt last night. I don't know what the diagnosis is, if it's dislocated or fractured. But did you ever go through this with something on your passing hand?
Yeah, Monday Night Football 2008. I hit my right index finger off of Marcus Stroud's helmet and ended up having what was called a mallet finger. Didn't know it at the time. It was honestly so cold in Buffalo. I thought I just stoved it. I was trying to get it to warm up. I mean, my hands felt pretty much frozen, and really didn't realize it until we got into practice the following week. You know, had blood underneath my nail. We tried to drill through the nail to see if we could release the blood and release some of the pressure. I think at one point we drilled past that point, but it wasn't until after practice where we ended up going to get an MRI and x-rays taken. It was a small fracture. The tendons and the ligaments there are kind of torn up at that distal joint. And I tried to play the next week, but the hard thing is you have to understand, if it's his middle finger, your index finger and your middle finger, those are really the last two fingers to push the football. So that's going to control not only some of the power coming off of it, but also your accuracy and the way it's going to spin off your fingers. The index is the last. And that's why I tried to go, didn't have any control of Houston that next week, ended up having to have two pins put in, and it was casted for 6 weeks. So it could heal, which it probably didn't heal properly because I tried to play the next week. So my finger's a little crooked now for the rest of my life. But it took 6 weeks for it to heal. That's why I'm a little surprised. Maybe if it's a sprain, he'll be okay. But if he's torn something or if there's a fracture, I mean, there's no way to put a pin in there and really let it heal, especially with all the trauma you're going to take throwing a football and taking even snaps or getting hit and shocking and all that. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Where do you stand on Baker Mayfield as a franchise quarterback if you're the Browns moving forward? Are you going to pony up $40, $45 million a year?
Yeah, to me, I think he's a franchise quarterback. I do. I know everyone's making a big deal about the statistical arguments and everything else, but I think he can put them in a position to go on a playoff run and win a Super Bowl. Now, is he the same player as Patrick Mahomes and some of the others or Kyler Murray? No, he's different in that sense. But I do think he's got all those traits and ability to be able to lead them to one. The biggest thing right now is, you know, from a contract standpoint, you know, the hard thing is it's going to be hard to compare him to a Patrick Mahomes, for example, because the style of that deal, it's going to have to be closer to a Josh Allen, Dak Prescott. And, you know, if you're going to use stats to make that argument, yeah, it's probably not going to bode well. But I think you and I both know that's not how it works in the NFL. It's the next man up. It's not necessarily the guy that's going to say, hey, is Baker or Dak or Josh Allen better than Patrick Mahomes? I don't think so. But they might end up getting paid more than him certain years or at certain points in time throughout their you know, contract extensions. So that's more of the reality. It's an economical deal. It's not so much about stats or what we think of him as compared to another player.
Yeah, but I think it puts these GMs in a really difficult position because if you said I could have Baker Mayfield for $30 million a year as opposed to 45, like there's no middle ground here. And that's what concerns me as we move forward. You know, at some point you go, there's a ceiling here. There should be a ceiling here. I'm for everybody making all the money they want, but I don't believe a gun should be put to my head as a GM or owner and say, hey, that's what the going rate. No, it's not. It shouldn't be. Baker Mayfield is not the going rate. Baker Mayfield is not Deshaun Watson. He's not Mahomes. He's not a variety. He's not a top 15 quarterback.
Don't you think the franchise tag, though, which was originally created by the ownership side, right?
Yeah, I know.
That's what's gotten them in this situation because
Great point.
As every player gets closer to free agency, their agent starts saying, hey, well, this is what the first year of the tag looks like. This is what the second year of the tag looks like. If I have 1 year left on my deal, whatever you present me as far as guarantees, it better look like this year plus those 2 years in guarantees. If it's not, why would I accept anything? So I actually think the mechanism that they created to keep franchise quarterbacks, agents and players have now used it back against them from a negotiation tactic. And if you look at Kirk Cousins, I mean, if you play that thing out, I mean, there's a risk to it. You got to play year to year. Look at Dak Prescott. You know, he was able to do that too. There's definitely a risk to it. But at the end of the day, you're going to make out more in the end. So I know the owners want the franchise tag in there. I think players don't. But I think that plays into this argument a little bit as to why every single player makes that argument, because now you're basing some of those numbers off of the top five average of those quarterback contracts.
All right. Big game, Fox. It'll be big noon kickoff at Penn State and Iowa from Iowa City. What's on the agenda tonight? You got a workout in store? I'm going to guess.
I already got one in.
Oh, you did?
Already got one in. Yeah, I got to. Come on now. Come on, Dan. You know me. I was down there with Joel Klatt. We were getting after it a little bit. but we already did radio this morning. I already got a workout in.
What are you benching now?
Oh, God. I don't even try to do. You know what? I take that back. I usually put up 300 pounds once a week just to feel like I can still do it. So I'll do like a one rep 300 pounds, be done with it, maybe 315, and say, all right, I did it. I'll move on. But I don't try to like do too much more than that anymore. It still makes me feel good. Like I can still get that done. Plus I have three daughters, Dan. So at some point I'm going to have to get on some performance enhancing drugs to make sure I protect those three little munchkins I got at my house right now.
Do you wear a medium or do you wear a large shirt?
This is actually a double XL, Dan. I know what you're trying to say. All right. I know what you're trying to get at. This is actually a double XL.
I don't know. Like I don't.
It's more of what they call a European cut. I know you're unfamiliar with that. All right, I know you're unfamiliar with traveling overseas.
Yeah,
it's more of a European cut. Okay.
All right, just Just want to.
We'll get you. We'll get you some.
No.
It's called State and Liberty. We'll get you some.
I like loose. I like leaving something to the imagination.
I guess there's that play if you want to play things that way. I think you could. I mean, I'm not really sure what you're trying to say there, to be honest with you, Dan.
I don't know what I'm trying to say either. I can't wear a tight shirt. I think is what I'm saying there, Brady.
Well, you got to start coming and working out with us.
Come
on, we'll figure this out.
No, you and
we'll get
Klatt,
Fritz and the boys.
No,
we'll
you and Klatt, then you act like former quarterbacks. You know,
no, Klatt was having like we were having a heart to heart about it. He's really at a bad place right now with his workout. So we were trying. I was trying to pump him up a little bit and trying to get him going, but he was in a bad place this morning. So big pep talk.
Do you think it'll affect Joel Klatt on the call that he's in a bad place working out wise?
Well, you know, he works out before the game because I usually see him down there, you know, working out before he goes and gets the call in. We'll see where his head's at tomorrow. Today wasn't a good place. It was not a good place, but I think he'll be better tomorrow.
I'm just working on core, Brady. That's all I'm working on.
Yeah, you got to, right? You gotta get that six pack. I would say for you, though, calves, core, and then just arms. That's all you need to be doing at this point.
That's it. Yeah.
Calves, core. Yeah. Yeah. Because you go out, you probably golf a little bit, you put on a t-shirt and short. You got to look. You're the Phil Mickelson workout. That's essentially what he does now.
Calves, core, and arms.
Yeah, a little bit of arms.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm glad we had you on for that reason alone, right there.
I think we accomplished a lot.
Yeah,
I think we did. A lot of topics there.
Well, you know the show. Have fun tomorrow. We appreciate your time as always, Brady. Thank you, buddy.